You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The process of trying to conceive a child can be agonizingly painful for some people, so adoption can seem like a welcome alternative. But as Jennifer Gilmore shows in The Mothers, her latest novel, those assumptions are often quite deceptive. Vanity Fair praised her authorial voice for being, at turns, wise and barbed with sharp humor, and A.M. Holmes called it alternatively hysterically funny and heartbreakingly down to the bone, stripped bare honest. This is Jennifer Gilmore's third novel. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased that it has brought her back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Leonard. It's nice to be here.
What do you think is behind the desire to have a child? Not everybody wants one.
No, not everybody wants one. I mean, for Jessie, for my protagonist, she believes in families, and she wants to keep sort of the stories of her family and what goes on over the generations. Although she doesn't just think a family is having a child, she also thinks her family consists of a dog. So it's just kind of wanting to keep things going.
Is it always there, or is this your biological clock situation?
I think it's a biological clock situation for her, but she was sick. And I think she always was told she couldn't have kids and has had all this time to think about what it means to be a mother and sort of how you can fix the past by being a mother, perhaps.
So having been sick was important because it gave her a sense of her own mortality.
Well, there's that, true. But also that she was cut off from the biological experience. She wasn't going to be able to do it on her own.
Your title is The Mothers. Why plural when it's basically about a couple, Jessie and Ramon, who've been married for a while and have tried to conceive unsuccessfully only to go a different way?
It's really about all the mothers. It's about Jessie's mother, who traveled a lot and wasn't home. She worked for the State Department. She was an organizer. And then Ramon, who's Italian and Spanish, his rather crazy mother-in-law, Jessie's mother-in-law. So it's about all these different kinds of mothers. Also her friends in the neighborhood, those mothers.
Jessie asks herself repeatedly, what is a mother? Is that something you and some of your friends asked yourself as well?
Well, you know, my friends and family who have had an easy time having children, I don't think you ask yourself that often. You just kind of go along and do it if it interests you.
And then you figure it out as you're going along.
But that's
unfortunately
the thing.
Some people don't do it very well.
Right. Well, there you go. But thinking about what it means, I mean, it's almost like thinking about having money and not having money. And then you get money and you're like, oh, this is what it means to have money. So I think she's thought about it to the point that it's driven her insane.
Well, you've made no secret about the fact that this was based on things you've gone through. But how would you respond now to that question, what is a mother?
Well, I've recently actually adopted a child, finally, a couple of weeks ago. And I'm learning right now, it's just attending to his daily needs. But I think being a mother, I can't even define it. And Jessie can't define it. But it's more about sort of fulfilling this idea of mothering and what it means to mother. It's different than being a parent, I think. And it's different than biology.
Your two previous novels, Golden Country and Something Red, had a broad scope. This book, The Mothers, is much more intimate. Given the personal nature of the topic, how did it affect the process of writing this time around?
That's a really good question and a hard question. I was very resistant to writing the first person. I used to think that important novels are big, broad social novels. When I was on here before, my last novel was about the decline of radicalism in a family. So to write in first person about a woman's sort of inner desires and wants made me feel like it wouldn't be taken seriously. And so it was a leap for me to do it. I think it was kind of self-hating to not want to write about women's issues and be seen as a woman's writer.
Well, it also allows you to develop a certain kind of a voice to say things that you might not be able to say in third person.
Absolutely. And also they're going through
to wisecrack, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're going through this horrible thing, but as you know, you can say whatever you want as long as you use humor.
But you've also used the first person in essays. You've written a number of essays throughout your personal process in the New York Times style section about the anguish of going through in vitro fertilization and then in Vogue about the hazards that you can go through when you're trying to adopt. So can't you just make the next step and use that for fiction as well?
You mean to write a memoir?
No. I just meant the next logical step is to then take that voice and apply it to a novel.
Absolutely. And writing, you know, all these things that we were experiencing that I talk about in those essays, it sort of ignited the novelist within me, because there's issues of race and class and sort of how motherhood is sanctioned in our culture. But what I went through in that particular, you know, thing I wrote about in Vogue, those were all just, I could use it to develop this character and have a relationship with her, but she's not completely me.
And in writing fiction, it gives you a chance to have a different perspective on the personal story, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you can make things up, and you can be harder on your characters than you might be on yourself. And the reader has to do more work, I think, for fiction. There's less analysis.
My guest is Jennifer Gilmore. Her latest novel is The Mothers. At what point in your own attempts to have a child did you start to write this book?
That's an interesting question, because basically I decided to make this interesting, this experience, as opposed to just tragic. So I began to write, you know, while it was happening, and I'd never done that before. So, you know, deciding to end it before the process ended, well before the process ended, was an interesting experience.
And many people figure in vitro is the best way to go, because it's still part of the natural process.
I mean, a little bit natural, but yeah. I mean,
You wind up becoming pregnant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going through 9 months, your belly gets bigger and all of that.
Absolutely. You give birth.
You have a due date.
You do. And with adoption, you have a due date, and if it doesn't work out, you keep passing these due dates. It's actually quite sad. But yeah, you know, I myself tried did in vitro several times, and, you know, it takes a toll on your body. And, you know, adoption seemed like such a wonderful, altruistic, and selfish thing to do. It ended up being far more complicated, far more difficult than I expected. You're not really told a lot of the hazards, even though you're told little stories along the way. There's a lot of coded language and so on.
You take pains here to show the man's point of view as well. Is that something that usually gets lost in these stories?
Well, while I was writing it, I kept being the mothers. What does it mean to be a mother? Jesse really wants to be a mother. And then I thought, oh, there's a husband here. You know, it does take a look at marriage and sort of the strains this put on a marriage. But, you know, talking to a lot of men have read this book, and talking about how important it is to be a father isn't really talked about in the culture, but it is just as important for men to want families.
But it also can put a lot of strain on a relationship. Going through that whole in vitro thing, sure, it's harder on the woman, but there's money involved, there's worry, and then adoption involves a whole bunch of other real complicated processes, and some marriages don't survive.
No, it puts a big strain. You know, as an individual, when you don't get what you want, it's so hard. And then when there are two of you, where life is, as John Lennon said, happening while you're busy making other plans, it does put a strain. And I wanted that to be real in the book, to have a real look at what a marriage that is definitely straining beneath that looks like.
Jesse and Ramon decide to adopt. And they switch from thinking about adopting a child internationally, which might seem the perfect way to go because Ramon is, as you said, both Spanish and Italian. And then they choose instead open adoption. Why is that? And what is that process?
Actually, 95% of the adoptions domestically in the States are open now. Just to back up with international adoption, in the book and in our lives, international has become quite volatile. You know, Russia's banned adoptions, and Guatemala's closed. So that kept
and China has changed its policies.
So that seemed very frightening to her and to me. Open adoption, we thought, was so great. You know the birth mother. You have this relationship. It's best for the child, who doesn't have a fantasy of what their adoptive parents are. But it's complicated, because I personally talked to a lot of women, some who were pregnant and some who weren't pregnant. And, you know, your phone can ring at any time, and you never know what to expect.
Well, it's also the feeling that there are a lot of children who are born unwanted. Why not just take one of them?
Well, you can take one of them.
Are there a lot available, or is that
a
misconception?
I think the fallacy of adoption is that there are so many children available And that's not always the case. I mean, Jesse and Ramon want an infant. So there's that aspect. And that is one of the...
They didn't want to go to an orphanage and find a kid who's 3 years old.
Well, that's the foster care system, and that's a whole other animal, and that's a whole other system.
What does it mean that the laws aren't federalized? How different are they from state to state?
They differ from state to state. You know, the birth mother's revocation rights, how long she can change her mind for. There's something called ICWA, which is the Indian Child Welfare Act, and that has a lot of, you know, women are of Native American descent. I do want to just say, you know, adoption is a wonderful thing. Open adoption is a wonderful thing when it works. And adoption is kind of making the best of what is sometimes not such a great situation.
But in this book, you tell us about some real problems. First of all, it's expensive. And then there's the matter of having to woo prospective mothers.
I know. The analogy that one of the social workers uses is that it's like dating. You know, you keep dating and then you find the right match. But it can be really harrowing to talk to a birth mother for, you know, several weeks, have a relationship with her, and then she chooses another couple, or she, in fact, as what happens in the book, turns out not to have been pregnant, but just wanted a lot of attention. So there's a lot that can go wrong, and it can be emotionally taxing. And it is very expensive. You can often pay for a lot of expenses, and then when it doesn't work out, there it goes.
Some people just see this as a way of making money?
I'm sure that that's true. I mean, and I was told that with the economy as it is, that these things have gone up. But I do want to say birth mothers who are really placing their child out of love and who are in a situation where they can't parent are really doing a wonderful thing. So I don't want to – the people who aren't pregnant aren't birth mothers.
You've said elsewhere that adoption, while often the best arrangement possible – is by its very nature about loss. What do you mean by that?
Well, the birth mother has to, you know, lose parenting her child, and that's, you know, can cause a lot of grief. The couple or the single person coming to that has been through a certain amount of grief probably already, and the child will experience a certain amount of grief. And so it's making the best of that.
And then you have another situation here where Jesse's sister, Lucy, becomes pregnant.
You're ruining it. No, okay.
The old-fashioned way.
Yes.
And that that can make somebody feel rather inadequate.
Yeah. I mean, I think what happens in this book is this couple, they're always failing. They feel they're always failing. So when her sister, who, you know, is off traveling in South America and seems like the least committed of the sisters, shows up pregnant, it's sort of devastating for Jesse, who's actually quite selfish, to be honest.
Mm. You want to make a character who is has her share of faults.
Absolutely. I was very hard
Otherwise, on her. Otherwise, you think that you were harder on her than you would be on yourself?
Yeah, I do. I'd like to say that I'm not exactly her, but she's toxic and volatile and pissed off, and she's been in a bad mood for like 5 years. but I really wanted her to be funny, and she is funny. As we know, humor, like the Jews have used humor for a long time to deflect and survive, and it's sort of the same thing with her.
You have taught at a variety of colleges. You're at Princeton nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
How has your teaching changed as your career has progressed? You used to be in book publicity.
Yes. I worked in publishing, which was a totally different animal then. But teaching has changed. The more you teach, the more comfortable you get, the more you read, the more nimble you can be. I enjoy it a lot more. And I love teaching in Princeton. It's wonderful to like leave the city and go into this pastoral environment. But I also really, I teach undergraduates. So it's really wonderful to find, you know, students who are just starting out and wanting to write.
It does help that you're teaching at a school that people like Joyce Carol Oates also teach at. So
yes. In fact,
you're
I'm
attracting
in her office
the right kinds
semester.
Of
yes.
The right kinds of students.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on this, Jennifer Gilmore's latest novel called The Mothers. It is published by Scribner. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me, Leonard.